Welcome to One Health Wednesdays. This podcast aims to promote the principles of One Health and encourage professional development. Here's your host, Ginger Dixon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to One Health Wednesdays, a collaboration between LabOp and One Life Epi Solutions. I'm Ginger Dixon, and I'd like to introduce our guest today, Dr. Chancha Bhattacharya. And welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. You pronounce absolutely well. I'm Dr. Chanchal Bhattacharya from India.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us today. And I appreciate the feedback. I always want to make sure that I don't botch anyone's beautiful names. And you are a veterinarian in New Delhi, is that correct?
I'm a veterinarian and I'm having a postgraduate degree in veterinary public health. So I've been practicing in India for last 30 years almost. I have graduated from, I have obtained my DVM degree from Ukraine, from Kharkiv, Ukraine, in the year of 1989-90, long back. And then I came back to India. Then I started working in government sector as a veterinarian. After putting up almost 12 to 13 years of job in government sector, then I went to Kolkata, the erstwhile capital of India in British era. And I obtained my Master of Veterinary Public Health from very famous All India Institute of Hygiene and Public Health under Minister of Health and Family Welfare. Okay. For almost 15 to 20 years, I have been involved in zoonotic disease surveillance and control containment of zoonotic diseases in the national capital of India, Delhi. So this is my simple background, you see.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. So tell us about some of the diseases that you've worked with when doing that zoonotic surveillance there in New Delhi.
Yes, actually, in Delhi, we work for Animal Husbandry Department, Government of Delhi. And usually, it partners with clinical practice, treatment of mostly small animals, companion animals, dogs and cats, and sometimes also large animals like bovines, like buffaloes, like cattles, then horses, okay, sheep, goats, pigs, every type of animals we are treating. But mostly, as because we are in urban area, we are emphasizing on companion animals right now. Okay. So simultaneously, you see, I have been given additional charges of looking after the rabies situation in Delhi almost before 15 years. At that time, the NGOs, non-government organizations, they are performing the ABC program, Animal Birth Control Program, with collaboration of World Bank. The project was funded by World Bank and it was a huge project. So at that time I have been given responsibility to work with NGOs. At that time there was a project through which the government of Delhi was supplying anti-rabies vaccines to the NGOs. So I was looking after the audit, then how the implementation goes on, what type of anti-rabies vaccination camp they are organizing, like this, you see. Mm-hmm. So this is my first exposure towards zoonotic diseases, you see. And after that, I started developing a lot of passions for zoonosis.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I could absolutely understand, especially in your work with rabies and seeing, you know, the effects and what goes into prevention with that. And what brought on your interest in One Health?
I have started taking interest in One Health since the outbreak of avian influenza in India. Firstly, the first outbreak of avian influenza in India took place in 2006. At the time, the terminology of One Health was not existing at all. So I came across with these incidents in Maharashtra state, and I've been asked to prepare a SOP, standard operating procedure program for our daily state. So I have prepared some protocol for our state. If the outbreak will take place, then how we will control it, what type of containment measures will be undertaken, along with the health department, you see. Because at that time, we have come to know that it is a zoonotic disease. The avian influenza is a zoonotic disease, and it can be communicated to human being. So if at all there will be culling operations or other sort of surveillance work, then the people of animal husbandry or veterinary services who will work there, they will be exposed. So they have to be screened properly. So how the medical department, medical doctors will work after the exposure. So we have prepared some protocol, and I have taken very active part in this program, you see. And I'm one of the pioneers in this program to prepare the protocol. Okay. For daily state, definitely for daily state, not for whole India, but for daily state. Okay.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I can see how, there would need to be something in place with avian influenza being, you know, as infectious as it is, and having these people work with their physicians to be screened.
I would like to share another two incidences of avian influenza in Delhi. You see, There are two outbreaks in Delhi of avian influenza in 2016 and 2020. At that time, it was a very huge challenge in front of us because, you know, Delhi is a very big city and it is our capital. So all the embassies, all the United Nations organizations, international NGOs, and different business houses, they are located in Delhi. And politically, it has immense interest, importance. So, you see, we have been asked to do the control and containment work in such a manner that it should not be spread to the human being. So there were a couple of water bodies in Delhi where migratory birds came from Mongolia, from Russia, from Siberia, basically. So we had started collecting samples from these migratory birds, especially fecal samples, and we started doing our surveillance work. And we started the hygiene and sanitation work also in and around the water bodies. We sprayed disinfectant. We sprayed lime. And we imposed quarantine measure so that in these water body, outside people will not enter. And the workers who are working there, they will not be mixing with outside people. Okay. So this type of measures are undertaken simultaneously in Zoo Park, National Zoo Park in Delhi also. There were a lot of migratory birds. We have also started taking their samples, and we sent it to our national level laboratory in Bhopal. There is high disease animal disease laboratory under Indian Council of Agricultural Research, Government of India in Bhopal. So usually we are sending all the samples there, and the samples are screened. And you see, although we have faced a lot of difficulties, but we controlled the avian influenza in 2016 and 2020 in Delhi very successfully. And I can proudly say that I am a very active member of this control and containment team, and very successfully, especially I was responsible for South Delhi and New Delhi. And I'm very successfully doing my duty, and no severe outbreak took place in Delhi due to our hard efforts, you see.
That's wonderful. And those are very robust interventions and protocols that you had in place. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. So you mentioned there were the migratory birds, coming in from other areas. What are some of the other changes in wildlife patterns and disease that you've observed, you know, whether due to climate change or maybe other factors?
Yeah. Let me highlight. Actually, you see that pattern of diseases, especially in case of livestock and wildlife, are changing due to climate change, you see, because in our country right now in Delhi, it is 46, 47 degrees centigrade. The temperature is and simultaneously in most of the northern part and central part of India, the heat wave is going on. So, you know, there are certain changes in biodiversity also. If you are studying the disease dynamics and disease ecology, the frequency of unknown diseases have been increasing among livestock and people. So one thing I will tell you that earlier, when the climate change was not so evident, at that time, the wildlife did not have that much of contacts with livestock and human being. But right now, as an example, in and around wildlife, there is a buffer zone. There usually a buffer zone should exist. At least 3 to 5 kilometers, you see, where no livestock should graze. But right now, due to rampant urbanizations and weather changes and other changes in our biodiversity, the contacts between wildlife and livestock have been increased a lot. What we'll say on the other hand, that human-animal interface also increased. There are wildlife tourisms. A lot of people from urban area, they are going to wildlife inside the jungles, you see. So they are getting exposed to different pathogens. Usually, due to this climate change and heat wave, some pathogens become very active. So when you are penetrating inside wildlife, when human being and livestock are penetrating inside wildlife, they are getting contact with wildlife animals also. So it could be very easy to transmit wildlife pathogens to human being and livestock. So definitely there are certain consequences which we are facing. As an example, I can give you an example of Kazanur forest disease, this is disease of monkeys, which earlier only concentrated in our Karnataka state. But right now, you can find out these diseases in our other southern states like Tamil Nadu and Kerala. And a lot of human beings are also getting these diseases. So you see the overall patterns of wildlife diseases are changing very rapidly changing. So our Ministry of Environment and Forest, they are also trying to establish proper wildlife disease control and containment, considering one health perception, you see.
That's wonderful. And do you work closely with the Ministry of Environment and Forest?
I usually do not work in wildlife. Sometimes I have been summoned in zoo garden when there are some emergency works. But I am not trained in wildlife. I am basically trained in zoonosis and diseases of livestock and domesticated animals. Okay.
Yeah. And understanding that there's definitely a lot to know about each sector. And so some of that specialization is absolutely necessary.
Obviously.
But it sounds like there's a lot of, you know, interdisciplinary communication in place where, you know, you're understanding what's going on at each of these interfaces and interactions. And you made some great points about, you know, that the pathogens are more active as we have climate change and there's more interaction between, you know, absolutely, wildlife and livestock and wildlife and humans. And so, yeah, thank you for sharing. And I want to go back to a little bit, you had mentioned the ABC plan with rabies. And I know you had mentioned to me before the National Plan for Rabies Eradication. And yes, I'd love to know a little bit more about that and, you know, some of the departments involved. And
sure. I would like to highlight on that. Actually, Government of India, Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, and Ministry of Animal Husbandry, they both joined hand and they launched National Rabies Eradication Program on last September 2021. Okay. Under these programs, different stakeholders will be there. In every state, there will be a state rabies eradication program. In every state and every centrally located areas in different cities. Okay. So they have issued proper guidelines in consultation with FAO and OIE. So different stakeholders like the veterinary and animal husbandry department, health department, municipal corporations, then police department, then the Ministry of Environment and Forest, all of them are involved in this program where everybody is coming under one umbrella. And the central ministry, Ministry of Health, is the nodal agency here, nodal ministry here. They have adopted the One Health approach for rabies eradication program. We have a target that within 2030, we will eradicate that the dog-mediated rabies from India. For that, we have taken some aggressive vaccination program in different areas. You see, as per the WHO guidelines, we have to vaccinate, we have to neuter and vaccinate the dogs up to 70% in a particular area of dog population. Okay, if you are not achieving at least 70%, then the animal birth control program will not be successful. So right now, you see, we are continuously monitoring the dog bites. We are sharing our data with the health department. In case of sylvatic rabies, you see, from wildlife, the wildlife departments are also sharing data with us. And we are trying to establish a proper protocol for rabies eradication. Number one, vaccinating the community dogs and stray dogs, then neutering the dogs very properly. Then if there will be any dog bite, then the risk communication should be there to different, you know, within different departments, different stakeholders. And simultaneously, the human rabies control unit will take necessary action and vaccinate the person concerned and make a proper observation so that if there will be any changes clinically, then they will take necessary action. You see, these type of things we are going to do. And initially, we are establishing plans for our different states. Then we will go to our district level. In every district, there will be a rabies eradication plan also. Okay. And our central government is very keen to implement this program in grassroots level also. And until a proper implementation will be taken place, it will not be possible to eradicate rabies from dog oriented rabies from India up to 2030. So that is a national program, and we have a lot of importance on that.
Yeah. And I explain to us why the 70% level of vaccination and neutering is important for the program to be effective.
Yeah. In my opinion, that it is a WHO guidelines. You see, when you are taking a particular area, you know, the dogs have a social and territorial hierarchy. Usually, the community dogs are staying in a particular places. Such as an example, if I am taking a 1 square kilometer area, maybe there are 50 dogs. If I will not be able to catch hold of at least 70% of these 50 dogs, and if I am not able to neuter them and vaccinate them, then the ABC program will not be successful. We cannot reduce the dog bite related rabies incidents in our country. As an example, in Sri Lanka, our neighboring countries, they did it very successfully, you see. They have taken the help of WHO, FAO, and OIE, and they have done it earlier very successfully. So this is the thing, you see. Your target should be at least 70%, and you would like to try to achieve more than 70%, obviously, but it should not be less than 70%. 70% is a landmark.
Okay, yeah. And I imagine that has something to do with herd immunity or maybe a minimum for that type of immunity to be conveyed in the community.
No, actually, you know, the plan is, we have already started implementing this plan. And right now, the budget allocations and other things, we are looking for that, because without getting the budget, you cannot properly implement these things. So things are going to be on a right track within a very short time. And already we started working on our state plan. National plan is already established and it is available in internet also. Anybody can have an access for the national plan of rabies eradication program. So this is the thing, and we are totally adopting one health approach here, because it is a multi-sectoral approach. When basically, according to my experience, you see, if you want to fight with a zoonotic disease or pandemic, it should be a multi-sectoral approach. You cannot do alone. Earlier, we have seen that when the question of zoonosis was arising, practically zoonosis was nobody's child. Health department is telling them, no, we are not doing it. It is for Ministry of Agriculture. At that time, it was Ministry of Agriculture in our country. In case of Ministry of Agriculture, they are telling, no, we are only concerned about the livestock who are going to give GDP. You see, so there are a lot of confusions. But when you establish a one health approach, then nobody can deny their responsibilities. That is the charisma of one health, you see.
Yes, I like that. And that's great. Then too, you kind of outline what everyone's responsibilities are, and everyone has a better understanding and a better plan.
Yeah,
for sure. I like that. Were some of the lessons from avian flu applied here to the National Rabies Plan as well?
Oh, yes. Obviously. Actually, I mentioned you earlier that, you see, avian influenza taught us what is One Health. When under one umbrella, different organizations are working under the civil administration. Okay. So from that approach, we have gathered a lot of information that when a zoonotic disease type of outbreak is taken place, then what type of actions should be taken, and what will be the action-oriented work of every stakeholder, because every stakeholder has different responsibilities and there should not be any overlapping. You see, if I am responsible for animal health, I will do my work on animal health. If the health department is responsible for the treatment of the affected people, they will look after and they will take blood samples, they will take proper responsibilities for surveillance of human being. As an example, if we are doing a culling operation, then there may be law and order problems, you see. Then the police authority will intervene. So everybody has a very properly described responsibilities during avian influenza operations. So we have learned a lot of things from these operations, that when we have implemented our national program for rabies, we took a lot of things from this learning, you see. It is a eye-opener, and it is a very good learning experience for, especially for medical and veterinary fraternities.
Absolutely. And thank you for going over, you know, a lot of the guidelines and considerations that went into that national plan. I think that's excellent to, you know, for other people to learn from. And I think when we were discussing too, that, you know, you have done a really great job of looking at what other people have done, you know, and what's been effective and what hasn't, and learning from your own experiences as well. I think that's an important part of this process as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing.
One thing can I add here? Actually, I would like to highlight something regarding our medical and veterinary curriculum. Okay. We are having degrees, MBBS, Bachelor of Surgery, Bachelor of Medicine, okay, for medical people. And we are offering BVSC degree, Bachelor of Veterinary Science degree, Bachelor of Veterinary Science and Animal Husbandry, BVSC and AH degree we are offering in graduation level. You see, if you are considering the academic programs before 10 or 15 years, people have very little idea about zoonotic diseases. In 2012, Public Health Foundation of India has conducted a survey among the medical students regarding zoonotic diseases, zoonosis. Only 2 to 3% medical students responded what exactly zoonosis is. Rest of the students do not have very concrete idea. Same thing is happening with some veterinary colleges. Although in veterinary science, we have taught lot of zoonotic diseases, but what is the consequences of the zoonotic disease and what will be the impact on human health? That was not taught at that time. But right now, the entire curriculum is revisited and One Health approach is included both in veterinary and medical curriculum. And it is very encouraging, you see. It is very, very encouraging. And changes are happening. I'm very sure that our government is doing a lot for One Health campaign. And an awareness is created among the social mass. And a lot of multinational companies, a lot of international NGOs, they are taking a lot of interest in One Health. And there are changes. So simultaneously, our medical and veterinary students started gaining a lot of knowledge about One Health. When they are graduating from their colleges, they will be well equipped to handle the One Health challenges, you see. So that is very important for us. That is very important for our future. That is very important for our society.
That is. And that's very inspiring. I'm a huge proponent of education, and especially education around this One Health field. And so that's fantastic to hear that those things are in place for students that are, you know, still in school and graduating. And there are absolutely a lot of opportunities for students to get involved in, you know, these One Health organizations and student One Health organizations as well.
Yeah. That is very, very good. Even right now, what we are planning, we are planning to go to the school, and especially in class 9, 10, 11, and 12, we will highlight something about One Health. You see, what is the importance of One Health? And definitely, I'm quite sure that the students who are studying in higher classes, they will show much interest about it. And I'm quite sure that it will have an impact on the society. I'm very hopeful about it. And simultaneously, I will try to help as much as possible to our students regarding this, regarding counseling or other things. You see, a lot of students are calling me that what is the prospect of One Health in future if we are pursuing our postgraduate degree in One Health or zoonotic diseases. Then what will be the outcome in future, like this, like this, like this. And I try to guide them properly. What exactly is awaiting for them, you see?
Yeah, yeah. And that's great that you're getting those calls. I love to hear that. Yeah. And especially, you know, when you're going in schools and exposing students to, you know, what is One Health and here are the options, you know, in this field. That's fantastic. They get the opportunity to, you know, integrate that into their worldview and get that interest in pursuing a career in One Health.
Yeah.
And on that note, do you have any advice that you'd like to share here with students or maybe people who are early in their careers or wanting to transition into One Health?
Yes, of course. Actually, One Health is such a subject. It is a multidisciplinary subject. It is not only a subject for medical and veterinary graduates, sociologists, economists, engineers, then common public health specialists, you see geography specialist, then GIS specialist, mm-hmm. everybody, computer analyst, everybody should be involved here because it's a very vast subject and very vast things should be covered. One medical or veterinary graduate cannot do it. So until a multi-sectoral approach will develop, One Health will not achieve that much what we are expecting it will be in the near future. Okay, so I'm hopeful that, although I'm a veterinarian, but I'm hopeful that students from different backgrounds, like economics, like sociology, like geography, like engineering, also come and study One Health as a postgraduate subject, you see, or as a PhD subject, so that they can gain access about the different aspects of One Health and they will build their career as a One Health expert. Okay, this is my suggestion and this is my thinking. You see, this is my dream. And sometimes I believe that one day my dream will be fulfilled and I will be the happiest man.
Yeah, that's an excellent dream. And I like that you brought in, you know, those aspects of economics and sociology. You're absolutely right. Those are important in One Health as well. And it would be great to, you know, consider, especially when you're doing these national plans and, you know, what does this really look like when we put it into practice? That would be excellent to have those expertise as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, fantastic advice. Thank you. Yeah.
You are welcome.
Yeah. And I'd like to give you the opportunity here, if you'd like to thank anyone that's helped you along the way or anyone that you work closely with.
You see, one thing I would like to add here that in any aspect of One Health, if anybody wants to take my help, they can take. I'm an open person and you see, I have gained a lot of knowledge for the last 30 years in the aspect of medical veterinary medicine and zoonotic diseases, then One Health aspect, definitely. You see, how to control the diseases, how to control the transboundary diseases. That is one of my passionate area, how to control the transboundary diseases. So I have got a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience. So I will be happy if anybody wants to take opportunity to get in touch with me and wanted to take my knowledge for solving some problems. I'm very happy to share my experience and my knowledge with them. So this is my message, you see.
Thank you. That's very gracious of you to offer your experience and your mentorship. And we'll provide a link to your LinkedIn profile so people can reach out and say hello and ask.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, I would like to thank you that you have taken me the opportunity to appear with you in this interview. And I got the opportunity to highlight my own professional life and how we are working here in India in respect of One Health and zoonotic diseases, you see. I'm very happy that at least I can share this experience with others who can have access with your podcast, you see. Anyway, I would thank all of One Health activists throughout the world through your podcast. And definitely, Dr. Dixon, I'm very grateful to you for giving me this opportunity. And in future also, if you need any assistance from my side, please get in touch with me. I'm always available for any causes of One Health. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us. And I have to make a brief correction. I'm not Dr. Dixon yet. I'm in process. I have just another year or two left. And then I can accept that title. But thank you for joining us as well and sharing your experience and lessons learned and sharing with our audience as well. And we wish you luck on your One Health journey.
Thank you. Grateful.
To support the mission of One Health Wednesdays, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify and remember to leave a rating and review. You can find us on all social media channels and at onehealthwednesdays.com.